what you really see from this is the continual degeneration of the nation of Israel, where you've got tribe fighting tribe, brother fighting against brother over basically trivial matters, bragging rights, you know, you went off and fought without me, you made me look bad type of stuff, just stupid stuff. And then after we have Japheth, he judges Israel for six more years. Then he dies, and we have Ibzan from Bethlehem becomes judge. He does something a little, well, something he shouldn't have done. He's got 30 sons, and instead of getting daughters from Israel, he goes from outside and gets 30 wives for them. He judges Israel for 70 years, and then he dies, seven years, and then he dies and is buried in Bethlehem. We have Elon from Zebulun shows up. He judges for 10 years. Abdon from Hillel, from Pirathon. He's got 40 sons, 30 grandsons, and it talks about how he, in verses 14 there, about him, them riding 70 donkeys. And that's just, as we talked about before, it's an indication of their that family's wealth. Everybody's got their own car. Basically the way it comes out. And then Abdon dies and is buried in Pirathon in the land of Ephraim in the hill country. And now we come into chapter 13, where has anybody read chapter 13 yet?
Yes.
Yeah? We're going to go through that really fast here in a minute. But Samson, let's back up here a little bit. Lots of times when we read the Bible, we get this idea that, for instance, in the book of Judges, that everything is going along in sequential order. And really, it's not. Several of the judges overlap each other or are judging Israel at the same time. Remember, you've got this division among the nation where you've got this tribe here and this tribe here. And so you'll have a judge over here that's judging Israel in this area and then another judge that's going on over here. You've also got other things going on in the nation right now besides just what you're reading about in the book of Judges. We read the book of Judges, we think everyone's corrupt, everything is bad. But as with the rest of human history, God always has a remnant that He preserves for Himself. For instance, during the book of Judges is when we have the story of Ruth and Naomi and Boaz. In fact, we've already passed Ruth and Boaz. They were all the way back here chapter 3. Go back to chapter 3, all the way back there, when we have Ehud judging Israel, and Ehud murders Eglon, the king of Moab. Well, at that time was when the big famine was going on, and you've got Naomi's and her husband and sons go to Moab and live there during the famine. Why do they have a famine? They have a famine because God is judging Israel for their sin. And so instead of staying there, they go off to actually the place that He's using as to judge Israel and live there. And so you have the death of Naomi's husband and sons. And then after Eglon is assassinated by Ehud and we have peace in Israel, you've got Naomi and Ruth coming back to Israel, coming back to Bethlehem, where she meets Boaz. And then we have the grandfather of David is born. Okay, so God is doing more than one thing at a time. Okay? You've also, right now, we'll hit chapter 13 here, and we'll go through several chapters where we see Samson. Samson is really the last judge. Yeah. And the funny thing is after Samson, when you get in here and you start looking at all this stuff with the Benjamites, that chronologically actually happened years before Samson. Okay, and it's not unusual for the writings of this time to be like this. Okay, So Samson is going to be our last judge. Samson's rule or judgeship of Israel will usher in the reign of Israel's kings. And there's a little thing to look at here, especially in 13, that will kind of give you an idea of how Samson is a sort of a shadow or a prototype of someone that we're going to see in the first century in the book of Luke. Also, during the time of Samson, remember Eli the priest, who had the two sons that were just completely off the rails? Okay, that's during Samson's rule as a judge. This is going on simultaneously. Samuel is born during the time of Samson's judgeship over Israel. Okay, so we've got all this stuff overlaps. And like I say, God does more than one thing at a time. There's all these kinds of things going on. Maybe in the next week or so, I'll put a timeline up here for the book of Judges, and you can see how all these things intertwine. It can actually get kind of confusing. And you've got to gather information from other places, like from Chronicles and the Kings and all this stuff, and look at the genealogies and when certain people reigned, and to line them all up. But anyway, that is what's going on during this time. So let's start here in chapter 13. And for those of you that haven't read chapter 13 yet, I'm going to go ahead and go through the whole thing, and then we're going to talk about this. B'nai Israel, the children of Israel, again did what was evil in the eyes of Adonai, and Adonai gave them into the hand of the Philistines for 40 years. Okay, now there was a certain man from Zorah, from a Danite clan, whose name was Manoah. His wife was barren and bore no children. Remember this, Manoah and his wife, her womb has been closed up. They have had no children. They are advanced a little bit in age. Then the angel of Adonai appeared to the woman and said to her, "Behold now, you are barren and have not borne children, but you will conceive and bear a son." What we're getting into here is another theophany, once again, we see the pre-incarnate Messiah show up on the scene in human history before he comes as a baby, just like what happened with Gideon, okay? And as we go through this, it becomes evident who this angel of the Lord is. "Behold, now you are barren and have not borne children, but you will conceive and bear a son. Now, therefore, be careful not to drink wine or strong drink or eat any unclean thing. For behold, you will conceive and bear a son. Let no razor come upon his head, for the boy will be a Nazarite to God from the womb. He will begin to deliver Israel from the hand of the Philistines." Go to Luke chapter 1. Luke chapter 1, starting at verse 13. And I told you, Samson is a shadow of something to come. Chapter 1, verse 13 through 15. "But the angel said, 'Do not be afraid, Zechariah, because your prayer has been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will give birth to your son, and you will name him John. And you will have joy and gladness, and may rejoice in his birth. He will be great before Adonai. He should not drink wine or intoxicating beverage, but he will be filled with the Holy Spirit just out of his mother's womb.'" Both John the Baptist and Samson are Nazarites from birth. Now, what does it mean to be a Nazarite? Well, go to Numbers chapter 6, explains the Nazarite vow. Remember last week we talked about vows. This is a vow that God actually set up, but it's different than the vow that Japheth made. Okay, this is, and the Nazarite, chapter 6, the Nazarite vow is a vow that someone would take when they wanted to set themselves apart to serve God for a certain amount of time. In other words, I would say, I'm going to dedicate myself to the Lord's service for the next 6 months. And so I would take a Nazarite vow. When I took that Nazarite vow, y'all can read chapter 6, but chapter 6 contains all the rules for the Nazarite vow. But basically what it was you set yourself apart, and the way you could tell a Nazarite was you couldn't eat or drink anything that came from grapes. Okay, anything that came from grapes. Everybody immediately thinks of wine, but no grape juice, no grapes, no raisins, no vinegar made out of grapes, nothing that came from the vine. You fasted basically from that. Okay, there were rules about touching a dead body and what you could do. And if a Nazirite, even if a Nazirite's family died, he was not allowed to participate in anything with the burial ritual or the funeral that brought him in contact with the body. If something did happen, then there was a whole process of becoming ceremonially clean again that he had to go through. And the most famous one is that a Nazirite did not cut his hair. From the time that he made the vow to the time that the vow was over, he didn't cut his hair. Now, what was traditionally done was, and you see Paul do this, okay, in the book of Acts. Let's see, chapter 18, verse 18, and Acts 21, 24, you see Paul taking a Nazirite vow, and what he did was, and this was a traditional thing, I'm going to take a vow. So at the beginning of the vow, I'm going to go shave my head. I'm going to make my vow, and my hair is going to grow to the end of my vow. And at the end of my vow, then I go get a haircut again. Because part of ending that vow was, and you'll see that in Numbers chapter 6, was cutting off your hair and it being put on the altar with the burnt offering. There's something in particular here that you need to keep in mind. Numbers 6, 7, even if his father, mother, brother, or sister should die, he is not to make himself unclean because his consecration to God is on his head. Okay, remember that. The symbol of the Nazirite, his consecration to God, is symbolized by that hair. Now, remember that as we study Samson, because you're going to see Samson break this vow over and over and over again. Okay, he's going to do all kinds. He's going to touch dead things. He's going to drink wine. Samson's going to do a bunch of stuff. But the symbol stays on his head, and that's important. Okay? Everybody's got that? Okay. So we see Samson, and what is Samson going to do? What does the angel say he's going to do here? For behold, you will conceive and bear a son. Let no razor come upon his head, for the boy will be a Nazirite to God from the womb. He will begin to deliver Israel from the hand of the Philistines. He will not deliver Israel from the Philistines, but he will begin to deliver them from the Philistines. John the Baptist is also a Nazirite from birth. We've got two Nazirites from birth in the Bible, Samson and John the Baptist. Everybody else takes it up for a time and then sets it back down. Okay? But these are two, these had no choice in being Nazirites. God ordained. Okay? Samson begins to deliver Israel from the Philistines. Who delivers them from the Philistines? The king. David. David, the promised king, God's chosen king, delivers them. John the Baptist begins this work where he baptizes people for what? For forgiveness of sin, right? But he doesn't complete that forgiveness. Who completes that? The king. So you've got this Old Testament shadow type that Samson points the way. Samson's whole thing is to point the way to this. I'm not good enough to do this, but this will. He's leading Israel in a direction, just like John the Baptist. Okay, so you see the parallels there. So then the woman, verse 6, then the woman came and told her husband, saying, a man of God came to me, and his appearance was like the appearance of the angel of God. Very awesome. But I did not ask him where he was from, nor did he tell me his name. He said to me, behold, you will conceive and bear a son, so drink no wine, strong drink, or eat anything unclean, for the child will be a Nazirite to God from the womb to the day of his death. Then Manoah entreated Adonai and said, my Lord, please let the man of God whom you have sent to come to us again and teach us what we will do for the boy to be born. God listened to the voice of Manoah, and the angel of God came again to the woman. Doesn't come to Manoah. Okay? Shows up first to his wife. Shows up again to his wife. She has to go get him. So the woman ran quickly and told her husband and said to him, "Look, the man came to me the other day, has appeared to me." So Manoah got up and followed his wife. When he had come to the man, he asked him, "Are you the one who spoke to the woman?" "I am," he said. Then Manoah said, "Now may your words come about. What will be the child's rule and his mission?" The angel of Adonai said to Manoah, "Let the woman abstain from all that I mentioned to her. She should not eat anything that comes from the grapevine, or drink wine or strong drink, or eat anything unclean. She must observe all that I commanded her." So Manoah said to the angel of Adonai, "Please let us detain you so that we may prepare a young goat for you." But the angel of Adonai said to Manoah, "If you could detain me, I would not eat your food. But if you present a burnt offering, then offer it to Adonai." For Manoah did not realize that he was the angel of Adonai. Then Manoah asked the angel of Adonai, "What is your name? So that when your words come to pass, we may honor you." But the angel of Adonai said to him, "Why do you ask for my name? It is wonderful." Who is this? Okay. Can it be anyone else? Okay. "It is wonderful." Manoah took the young goat and the meal offering and offered them on the rock to Adonai. And he said something wonderful as Manoah, and he did something wonderful as Manoah and his wife were watching. For it came about when the flame went up from off the altar toward heaven that the angel of Adonai ascended in the flame of the altar. Manoah and his wife were looking on, then they fell on their faces to the ground. But the angel of Adonai appeared no more to Manoah or his wife. Then Manoah realized that he was the angel of Adonai. Manoah said to his wife, "We will surely die because we have seen God." But his wife said to him, "If Adonai had desired to kill us, he would not have accepted a burnt offering and a meal offering from our hand, nor would he have shown us all these things or let us hear such things as these at this time." Then the woman bore a son and called his name in Hebrew Shimshon. Okay, we've anglicized it to Samson, but it's Shimshon. It comes from the word Shemush. It means sun, as in sunshine. Okay, obviously, his mama liked him. So the boy grew up, and Adonai blessed him. Then the spirit of the Lord began to stir him in Manadan between Zorah and Eshtol. So, Here we have the entrance of Samson into the world. And we've already talked about how he is a type of something that points to something greater. As we study Samson for the next couple of weeks, I want y'all to think about something. The first thing is we need to think about Samson differently than we do. Unwittingly, we have transformed Samson into an action figure. We have made Samson into the image that man likes to see. For instance, if you get any children's Bible story book, and I remember this from when I was a little kid, there were two drawings in this kid's Bible that I had that I always remember. One of them was the lady dropping the millstone on the guy's head. I thought that was pretty neat. And the other one was Samson with the jawbone. Okay? How do we present Samson to our children? Well, he looks like John Rambo. He's huge. Samson's not huge. Samson is no more special than me. Samson could be any one of you in this room, except for Rusty, because he's too big. Samson could be any one of you in this room. There's only one physical attribute that we keep hearing over and over about Samson, and that's his hair. Okay? Samson is like any other man. The only thing that makes Samson Samson is the Spirit of the Lord on him. Anything else about him is like everybody else. In fact, the long hair is not that big of a deal because there were other people, I'm sure, in Israel at that time that had taken a Nazarite vow. fact he was a Nazarite from birth is a big deal. But Samson is like anybody else. Why can they not figure out how to beat him? They can't figure it out because he's a regular guy. He is a regular guy. He messes up. He's a regular guy. He looks like a regular guy. He acts like a regular guy. There is nothing about him to make us go, ooh, Samson, we want him in charge. Okay? Ooh, Samson, look how big and strong Samson is. No, Samson comes into town and whips a few hundred people and everybody's scratching their head going, how did this happen? How in the world what is it making this guy so strong? Okay? Samson is Samson because of God. No other reason whatsoever. In fact, when the Spirit of God leaves him, he can't do anything. His eyes get poked out and he gets led around by a little kid. Okay? Samson is Samson because of God. So we've got to always remember that. And why do I say this is a big deal about how we portray Samson in children's Bibles and in Sunday school and stuff? Because what you learn when you're a little kid is what sticks in your head when you become an adult. And all of a sudden, adults are walking around thinking, well, I can't be Samson. Look at me. I weigh 156 pounds, soaking wet. How am I going to be Samson? Doesn't matter. It's God that matters. Okay? The other thing is, if given a chance, or actually given the choice, and God said, you can live your whole life out, and you can either be King Solomon, or you can be Samson, but nobody else. Which one would you choose?
Samson.
Normally people think King Solomon. Oh, he's rich, he's wise, he's all that. Yeah, he was when he was young, but he got stupid. And he ended up being a very unwise king who led Israel into basically into division. They broke apart because he had basically brought all of them into slavery through all of his projects and stuff like that, and they were taxed so hard that they couldn't pay anymore, so they had to sell themselves to the king, and he married all these women and brought all these idols and put them into that great temple that he built to the Lord and was sacrificing to them in God's house. He started out great and ended terribly. Samson, on the other hand, is stumbling along through life and it's like, why in the world is God using this guy? But God loved Samson enough to break him so that at the end, Samson was greater than he had ever been before because he was broken. So, it is a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing for us to do. But we have to look at these things and look at ourselves and what goes on around us through the lens of Scripture and through the eyes of God. And when we do that, the things that we think are so great all of a sudden don't look that great.
Yeah.
And the things that we think are kind of, I'm not sure about that, they tend to take on greater significance. So as we go through here and we study the life of Samson, and it's not so much the life of Samson, but it's what God does through a man that is just an absolute mess. And it should bring hope to every one of us, because if God picks you and says, I will do something through you, he can do miraculous things through the biggest goof up that can come along.
Amen.
God's kingdom, God's plan, can go ahead even with less than perfect people. It doesn't mean I want to be less than perfect. But it lets me know that even when I am, he can still do something with that.
Yes.
Okay? So, everybody, we're set on Manoah, and we know it's going to be a good story because every time in Judges, when God actually shows up and stands there in front of people and talks to them, the story gets really good. We've got Samson goes through chapter 16. Okay, and then like I said, when we hit 17 on and we get in here to the idols and the Danites, we're actually jumping back chronologically to the beginning of the book of Judges. Okay? So next week we'll get through 14 and maybe some into 15. We got the great jawbone story there in 15. And the riddle. And what's he going to do here in chapter 14 that he's not supposed to do? He's going to touch not just something that's dead, but something that's unclean. He's going to eat something out of something that's unclean. Samson just starts off breaking the rules. Okay.